Shalom and Chazak Ve'amatz. This is Pastor David Oaks of the Light Church Fellowship and founder of David Oaks Ministries and Israel Study Tours with David Oaks. We have been discussing for the last 2.5 months Israel and Israel's place in Bible prophecy. We want to thank you for all those of you who have contacted us and have been blessed by these teachings. But one of the main things that we have been talking about is God prophesied that Israel, one of the greatest curses that would come on Israel in Deuteronomy the 28th chapter, if they were disobedient to God, is that they would be plucked up off of the land and they would be dispersed throughout the earth. But then Deuteronomy the 30th chapter tells us this, that Israel's hearts would turn back to God in the captivity and God would begin to bring them back into the land of Israel, the land of promise that he gave to them through the everlasting covenant. And then we began to look at scriptures as God reestablished the nation of Israel. And around the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, hundreds of thousands of Jews have been coming from all over the world to make their home again in this wonderful nation as it's become a breathing, living entity again. And we have today with us on today's broadcast one who is in fact a manifestation of Bible prophecy, whom God moved by his Spirit to come from a place outside of Israel and to move back with her family to the land that God had given to the people of Israel by promise. And I would like to introduce, and then I'll just let her give a little bio and say whatever she wants to say, but I'd like to introduce to you all Sandra Barris, who lives in a community in the Samaria region of Israel called Karnei Shomron. And she is the Israel director of the Christian Friends of Israeli Communities. Not bad, eh? And I would just like to introduce her to you and take your liberty, Sandra. Oh, good to have you today.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. It really is. Yeah, well, you mentioned that I came back to Israel. And it's really coming back to Israel because I feel part of an unbroken chain of Jewish history. And when Abraham first came to the land of Israel, well, that's my forefather. And when my people were exiled almost 2,000 years ago, those were my forefathers as well. And when I then moved to the land of Israel, I was indeed returning, coming back to the land. I was actually born in Cleveland, Ohio, and grew up there, went to school there, ended up studying in Israel for a year when I was 18 before coming back and going to college and then law school in New York. And after that, when I was married and I had two babies, and we moved to Israel. And I have always wanted to live in one of the new communities in Judea, Samaria. And I think that desire began when I was in high school and the whole settlement movement began. And I was still in Cleveland, Ohio, but being a very strong Zionist and feeling very attached to Israel, not just politically or historically, but biblically, because I grew up in an Orthodox home and Bible is always a very central part of our life and our education. So I connected so strongly to these areas. When I was 18 and I spent that year in Israel, I was there when the eighth and final attempt to settle the first community in Samaria, Kedumim, took place. And they finally, that was a group of young people who, at their own initiative, began a movement. And at the last attempt, there was something like 10,000 Jews from all over Israel that came over the mountains and the valleys to this hilltop in Samaria to demand that the government allow them to settle there. And it was successful. The government relented. This was in 1975, in December 75. The government relented and allowed them to settle in an army camp that was called Kadum, right near where Kadumim is located today. And I think Shimon Peres, actually, at the time, was the defense minister. And he believed, as did many, that after a few weeks in an army camp, these people would get discouraged and find the conditions too difficult and they would move away. Of course, that didn't happen. When I was in Israel at that time, in January, I went and spent a weekend there in that army camp. And it was a fascinating experience. It was a freezing experience because it was winter and it was here they were. We were on the mountains of Samaria and the wind was howling and we were sleeping in tents. I was so cold, I can't tell you. But that really was an incredible connection for me because it took the Bible that I had studied from a book And then I went and stayed on that hilltop, which represented the center of biblical Israel. And I looked around, and it was really empty then. There were no Jewish communities there. There were the same place that you would stand today, and you'll see community after community dotting the mountaintops. Then there was nothing. And I went out on one of these hilltops with someone, and he looked around, and I said, well, what do you see? And he says, I see that in another decade, we're going to have communities and cities all over these hills. And I looked at this guy, and I said, you're nuts. There's nothing here. The government just barely let you live in an army camp. This isn't going to happen. Well, I was the one with little faith. And I guess, therefore, it was just inevitable that when we came to Israel, this is where we would want to make our own homes. And in fact, our home of Karnei Shomron is just 10 minutes to the west of Kedumim.
It's fabulous. Let me ask you this. Could you tell us a little about raising children in the place? For those of you who might just be tuning in and haven't heard the previous instruction, when we refer to Judea, Samaria, or the Gaza Strip, these were territorial possessions. Gaza Strip was a territorial possession of the tribe of Judah, and the Samaria region was a territorial possession of the tribe of Ephraim. And that's what the world calls the West Bank. And so for those of you who aren't familiar with the biblical terms, we will give you an unbiblical term. God will never refer to it that way, and we will not either the rest of the day. But that will give you an insight into what we're speaking of. Now, you might hear on the radio or the television and newscast how these are maniac Jews that are running around, and you know, they have sharp teeth and they have long claws, and they're just the meanest that the world could ever come up with. But let me tell you what, the young lady that I have seated across from me is far from that. You should see her dress so daintily and her wonderful little cap. These are people who found in the Word of the Living God that it is their right to be where they are. And this Christian pastor believes with them because that's what the Bible said. Someone asked me one time, they said, are you pro-Israel? And I said, well, I'm pro-Bible, so therefore I have to be pro-Israel. I'm pro-God, therefore I have to be pro-Israel. But could you tell us what it's like to raise a family? I believe you said you have five children in area that is surrounded by hostile forces. Could you just give us some insight into that?
Well, basically, I think that we live life on many different levels. And that's probably what is so rich about living in Israel in general and about living in Israel where we are in Samaria. On the one level, I'm a mother and a wife. My husband and I both go to work. My husband is in computers. My children all go to school. They're all in various different classes, grades, etc. And similar, I'm sure, to the way people in Oklahoma and everywhere in the United States lives their lives. The kids go to school. The parents go to work. You have time with your friends and time with your family in the evening. But on another level, the very fact that we are living where we are living indicates a commitment to the land of Israel and to God's promises to the people of Israel. And that consciousness, that awareness of the significance of where we are living, I think lends a very definite spirit and significance to everything we do. And that also gives our life more meaning, so that instead of just going to school, working, and whatever, we are very involved in building our community. It is important to us that people know each other and people care about each other. I remember when our community was very young, when our neighborhood especially was very young, we didn't even have any public buildings. Instead of a synagogue, for a short time, we used a tent, and then we were like in some hallway of the local school. And little by little, we built synagogues. But we didn't have, you know, places to have celebrations. We used to celebrate on the street. And everybody used to come. We used to put out tables. Someone had a baby, let's say. Everybody used to come, bring some kind of a dish, put it on the table, and everybody celebrated together. And that is so much a part of the atmosphere and the spirit of what we have there. And it's special. It really is special. And I would say during these past couple of years, when we have been targeted by violence and by terrorism, by hatred of our Arab neighbors, who don't want us living where we are, who cannot accept the fact that this is our land. And I want to repeat, really emphasize here, we didn't kick anyone off their land. The Jewish communities were all established on very empty hilltops. And the Arabs did not live on those hilltops because they couldn't figure out how to get the water up there. The land where we live is very much not suitable for farming. And it took a tremendous amount of investment to turn them into productive, beautiful communities. And we didn't throw anyone off their land, but they don't want us living there alongside them. And, of course, we've seen that physically during these past couple of years when so many of our friends have been killed and wounded. But that same community atmosphere has served us well because we've all stood there for each other. And I've had a friend of mine was killed 2 years ago, and her husband and daughter were seriously injured. Both are paralyzed today from the waist down. And the whole family needed help. The mother had been killed. The father was in the hospital for 8 months. And the community chipped in and came to help these four children. And a woman from the community moved in to take care of these children. And that could not have happened if we hadn't first built a community. And so when you ask me what life is like, that's what it is. It's a community for joy and for tragedy.
Listen to this scripture from Jeremiah, the 31st chapter, verse 21. It says, "Set thee up waymarks, make thee high heaps, set thine heart toward the highway, even the way which thou wentest." And see, the Lord is speaking through the mouth of Jeremiah and saying that when Israel, when they were taken into the diaspora, when they were removed from the land that God had given them, he said, on your way out, he said, set up heaps. And then he said, turn again, O virgin of Israel, turn again to these thy cities. One thing that God wanted the children of Israel to do when they were leaving the land of Israel, he wanted them to remember. And he said, set up heaps. I'm sure they set up rocks and they set up things, but maybe more importantly than that, they set it up in their hearts and they set it up in their minds that this was our land. And though it took 2,000 years for them to come back to those heaps, they've come back to those heaps and that's what they found, just rocks. And I've stood there. And the miracle of the modern day, that in 1967, there was nothing on those hills. And people get the idea, you know, that these are, because this is what the news media gives, that there are little settlements and they just bring little mobile trailers out and they set them up. And this is all that these people have done. And these aren't really homes, so they can all be removed. They can all be packed up neatly and hooked onto a truck and pulled off. That's not what they have built here. This is the miracle of the common day. In this 36-year period, the magnificence of this is that they have built thriving communities and cities. Here we are in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Here we are in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, a town of 35,000 people, and yet it's been here since the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, but these people have accomplished the same things, the same industry, the same professional people that have established offices, doctors, lawyers, in just this brief amount of time. And so it's a real miracle, and I'm looking across the table at a miracle, someone whom God entrusted in their hands to build and to construct. Is there anything else you would like to tell us about the movement of community building in Judea Samaria?
Well, one of the things that's become so exciting for me, that I'm so excited to be speaking to Christians about what we're doing. And Christians have really come alongside us, and this is really special and very new. I represent an organization called Christian Friends of Israeli Communities. I, an Orthodox Jew in an organization that's Christian, is really a very new kind of thing. But basically what I'm doing is linking the people that I represent, the Jewish communities of Judea, Samaria, and Gaza, with Christians all over the world that are standing with us. And we've offered opportunities for Christians to help, to support projects in the communities, to come and visit and show support. And just like you did, David, when you brought your band and did a concert tour during Hanukkah for the children in Judea and Samaria, this is an amazing occurrence. And I think it is also a fulfillment of prophecy, because we read in the prophets, and in Isaiah in particular, about the nations helping the people of Israel come back to the land. And I think that is not just literally helping people from Russia or wherever come back to the land of Israel, but being an encouragement and a support for the people who have come back, who are building the communities and themselves are physically fulfilling prophecy. Christians being able to stand with us and be partners in that fulfillment of prophecy, I think in itself is a fulfillment of prophecy.
Amen. I tell you what, she's a pretty good preacher.
You haven't heard me preach yet.
Go ahead, take your liberty.
No, preach on.
It's interesting about the connection between Christians and Jews, because it is a unique happening even among Christianity. I remember the first few times that we'd been to Israel, we would be sitting at Kiddush with a Jewish, very Orthodox people, and there was a dilemma whether they would even take the bottle of Kiddush wine from my hand because I was a Christian. There was the dilemma. Should I go ahead and pour out of this bottle because you, the Christian, have touched it? And we don't want to make that one-sided. I've met Christians who thought the other way around. Should I even touch that wine bottle? But now we're seeing some wonderfully amazing things. We are seeing that those walls are breaking down, and there is a true Bible love that has been formed between Christians and Jews. Because we not only do this because Genesis the 12th chapter says that if we bless the Jewish people, we'll be blessed. That's not the reason why I love Jewish people. I love Jewish people because it says that my God, they are the apple of his eyes. And it seems like to me that it would be a good thing for me to love the same thing that my God that I say that I serve loves. And the concept of love is an amazing concept. I remember years ago, Zandra, we went to Jordan, and we had hired a Palestinian driver, of all things, to drive us around. And as he drove us for 3 days all over the kingdom of Jordan, he began to see something in our lives that he hadn't seen before. And he began to ask us questions about our God, about the God of the Jew, the God of the Christians. Because I'll just be bold here, the God of Islam is not the same God that we serve. Our God is a God of love. Our God is a God of peace, of man's heart and mind. That we can say that in Bartlesville. But one thing that I said to this young Palestinian young man who had three children, I said, let me ask you this. I said, you as a Palestinian father, do you want good things to happen to your children, or do you want bad things to happen to your children? And he said, well, of course I want good things to happen to my children. And I said, that's the difference between Islam and Christianity and Judaism. I said, because we don't have a God who is always striking out at us. And he saw the concept, and his heart really went out. He was searching out. In fact, he asked for a Bible because he wanted to see this kind of God. And it's a wonderful God that we serve. Mm. My wife, who is here with us in our makeshift studio, has written a question for Sandra. Should terror stop us or stop you? So that's the question. Should terror, that which is happening with the terrorists, should it stop us from proceeding on, or should it stop you?
Definitely should not stop us at all, because then what we are doing is handing the terrorists their victory. And that's the last thing we can afford to do. Not just because we are fighting for something that's so valuable, the fact that we're standing for Israel and Israel as the covenant land that God promised to the people of Israel. That in itself is a reason to stand against terrorism. But I think we have to go farther than that, because if there's one thing that the United States and Israel have in common, is that we are targets of terrorism. We're democracies. We present an alternative culture and lifestyle that Islam is trying to target. And so the last thing that any of us can afford is to allow that terrorism to change our lifestyles and to force us to change the way we live. And I believe, for example, in Israel, when I continue to go about my business, when I refuse to stay off the roads just because there's been some snipers on the roads. Now, sometimes that takes a certain degree of courage. Sometimes it's just plain stupidity. I don't know what it is, but, you know, I just keep driving. I am not going to let them keep me off the road. If I want to go shopping, if I want to go to a meeting in Jerusalem, I'm going to just get in my car and go. And I have friends who have put on bulletproof vests, and if this is what makes them feel comfortable, fine. And then they travel that way. But we have to keep going. And I say the same thing to you, people in America. Come and visit us in Israel. In the year 2000, we had about, I think, a million tourists, or over a million tourists coming to Israel. And this past year, it's been much, much lower, as was in 2001. And this has struck a terrible blow to Israel, as you can well imagine. The economy has suffered terribly because of this drop in tourism. But I think even worse than that, this has given Yasser Arafat and the Palestinian Arabs encouragement. Because the man who really doesn't want you here is Arafat. So can you let him get away with that? You just got to come, because what's happening in the land of Israel, well, really, God is doing incredible things in the land of Israel. I mean, there are difficult things, but there are also miracles, daily miracles. People are saved from much more terrorism than they are struck by it. And witness the fulfillment of prophecy. Look at the land bloom, just like you were talking about. What was on the hills of Judea and Samaria in 1967? Compare that to what's there today. Come and see that. And I think that okay, maybe you're a little bit frightened, but you have to set that aside for a moment. And you have to say, will I let terrorism get me down? And the answer has to be one loud, resounding no.
I agree. It's interesting because, you know, I don't want people to think, as they listen to me especially, because I preach pretty harshly against it and boldly against the situation. I don't want them to get the idea that we dislike and that we hate the Arab peoples. In fact, I have an uncle who is an Arab. He married my aunt. So I don't want people to get that idea. But even in the Bible, Sandra, you know, when the Bible speaks of a group of people that lived in the Gaza seacoast called the Cherethites, that it says concerning them, I don't know how that translates in Hebrew, but they lived in that area of Gaza, and those people who were not Jews were even there present and helped in the anointing of the kings of Israel. So God set up something in the Word of God for those inhabitants of the land, non-Jewish inhabitants, to be a blessing. And so those people had learned to function with the Jewish people and be a blessing, and they were brought in and they got to participate in one of the great events of all history, and especially of Jewish history, the anointings of the King of Israel. And so let me ask you this. I know the answer partially to it, but what has the presence of the Jewish people in Judea and Samaria, how has that brought, in times past before the Oslo Accords, how had that brought blessing to even the Arab inhabitants of Judea and Samaria?
Well, actually, that is actually a reflection of Israel as a whole. From the very beginning of the Zionist movement, when Jews began to return to Israel in great numbers, that brought economic recovery and stimulated what had been a pretty dead economy until then. And it's kind of ironic because so many of the Arabs who live in the entire area today, both Judea and Samaria and the rest of Israel, they claim they've been there for, you know, generation upon generation, but most of them only arrived at the beginning of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And what brought them into Israel was the economic recovery and the jobs that were made available when the Jews began to return to Zion. And the exact same thing happened in Judea and Samaria. In 1967, after being attacked by all the Arab nations around us, and particularly by Jordan, and as a result, Israel acquired this area of Judea and Samaria. At that point, it was just a dead area. The areas closer to Jordan at the time, there was a bit more of an economic activity going on. I remember as late as 1976 when I went out to what became Kudumim, there still wasn't electricity in so much of the area. Little by little, as Israel came in, brought electricity, brought running water, brought sewage, and eventually, as the Jewish communities were established in this area, brought jobs. And today, there are industrial areas that are Israeli industrial parks in Judea and Samaria, where a significant proportion of the employees in these industrial parks are Arabs. And the sad thing is that what has been the result of this particular violence, or what people refer to as the Intifada, and the same thing happened in the previous Intifada in the late 80s, with the people who were hurt the most were the Arabs, because they were no longer comfortable working in the areas. In fact, some of the Arabs were threatened with their lives by other Arabs for working for Jews. And so they were forced to leave their jobs, which is really unfortunate, because the truth of the matter is, if they were only to agree to live with us in peace, all of us could benefit.
There is a blessing for walking hand in hand with the Jewish people, and that blessing is available to the Arab peoples of the land also. I always thought it was amazing that if there was such care and concern, especially by the EU, the European Community, or the EC as the case may be now, it changes every few years, and then if there was such concern by the Arab nations or the Islamic nations about the Palestinian peoples, why weren't they doing these things to enhance their life 75 years ago or 60 years ago? But no, the blessing did come. And I'm so glad that Sandra brought that up, because 2 weeks ago we read from Innocents Abroad concerning Mark Twain's trek across Israel and how he didn't see anyone and it was just a barren wasteland. He said that not even cactus wanted to grow on the land of Israel. And that's a sad thing. Cactus likes to grow anywhere, as we know in Oklahoma.
We've run out of time for this week's broadcast, and we would like to thank Sandra for being with us. And she'll be back with us again next week as she gives us further insight into what it's like to live in the Samaria region, or what the world calls the West Bank. And Sandra will also be giving us more information about her organization, Christian Friends of Israeli Communities. Now, have you ever wanted to go to Israel? Well, let me tell you, I don't think there's a finer trip around than our tours to the nation of Israel. We have taken literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people to the land of Israel over the last dozen years. If you would like information on Israel study tours with David Oakes, and let me tell you, we will take you to some places that very, very few people will go. You will see the Bible like you have never seen it before. And if you'd like information on Israel study tours with David Oakes, please feel free to call us at 918-333-2838 and request an information brochure. That number again is 918-333-2838 for Israel study tours with David Oakes. Now, remember, I pastor the Light Church Fellowship in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Our Sunday morning service begins at 10 o'clock. You come on to church, and we'll give you a tape of the radio broadcast so that you won't miss it. So that's 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings at 1244 Southeast Washington Boulevard in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. If you would like to send us a letter or send us a note, get on our mailing list. Our mailing address is The Light Church Fellowship, P.O. Box 3261. That's P.O. Box 3261, Bartlesville, Oklahoma, 74006. Come out. Join us on Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. And remember, we're still in the midst of our Jesus is the Healer 30-day meeting. And you can come to the meetings and study about Jesus being the healer at 7 o'clock nightly until June 30th. Thanks for being with us. You can hear us again next week at this same time. Bye-bye for now.